This episode of Guitar Radio Show is brought to you in part by...
Isn't it time for a truly custom-made guitar? Unique design and construction. Handmade in America. Innovation to fuel your inspiration. Go to DNAGuitarCompany.com.
And also by...
Hey everybody, Mark Davin from Guitar Radio Show. Have you heard about Lock Knob? LockKnob.com? Lock Knob is a revolutionary product invented by a musician for musicians, solving the long-time problem of lost settings. How many times have you been at a gig or a session only to have to reset all of your settings on your amp or your pedals because they move during transit? You can upgrade your existing knobs on your amp, pedals, mixer, guitar, almost anything with a pot, with an all-aluminum quality-made reusable knob that does more than just look pretty. Never lose your settings again. Lock it down with Lock Knob. Go to LockKnob.com for more.
Welcome to Guitar Radio Show, the show dedicated to the guitar player, guitar maker, gear builder, and purveyors of such items that you may not know about, but should. Here's your host, Mark Davin.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 141 of Guitar Radio Show. We've got a double shot today, a double shot of the blues for you. And it's with Miss Samantha Fish and Ms. Diana Rain. And I think you're going to enjoy it. We got two separate interviews on two great blues guitar players, and we get in depth. We talk about music, we talk about gear, we talk about everything. And it's going to be a good one. I think you're going to dig it. Folks, guitarradioshow.com, guitarradioshow@gmail.com for any questions or comments or concerns. Thanks, Bob. And if you want to check us out on our Facebook page, please, by all means, do. It's a great place for guitar porn. What else do I want to tell you? Hey, did you check out the Tom Guerra episode? It was episode 140. We sat down with Tom. He's got a new record out. It's called Trampling Out the Vintage. And we had a blast talking to him, so that was fun. And I wanted to let you know about what we got coming up in the very, very near future. Our next episode, after this great episode with Samantha Fish and Diana Rain, we're going to have, rounding out the month of August, an episode with Mr. Frank Gambale. And this was a real fun conversation to have with him, and we kind of deconstructed the interview to have a different kind of a conversation. The month of September, we got some cool stuff coming up. We have, from Guitar Player Magazine, the editor-in-chief, Mr. Michael Melinda. We've got Mr. Dan Erlewine. He is works for Stu Mack. He is he's a repairman, luthier, and an expert on the instrument. We've got Bumblefoot, Ron Bumblefoot Thal, a great interview that I did with him a couple of weeks ago. We had so much fun talking about it, and he's great to hang around. And Bloomin' Trit Amps, right here in Austin, Texas. And I'm excited to share that with you. So lots of cool stuff coming up in the month of September. And I want to say hey and thanks to DNA Guitar Company. Go to DNAGuitarCompany.com. They are really helpful with us here at the show. And we've got some cool things coming up in the future with them that we're going to share with you. And also thanks to Lock Knob, LockKnob.com. They just actually have entered the Stu Mack catalog, so they're in the Stuart McDonald catalog. And there's lots of other cool things coming up with them in regards to some very well-known pedal makers. I don't think I'm allowed to talk about it quite yet, but I will when it's time. All right, that's about it. Let's get to it. What do you say? Here's our interview with Samantha Fish. And then right after that, we're going to go on an interview with Diana Rain. Guitar Radio Show. GuitarRadioShow.com. All right, folks, we got somebody who's got a what I like to think is an honest sound and approach to blues rock guitar, and really is in many respects one of the torchbearers for the future of the blues and rock guitar. We have Miss Samantha Fish with us. How are you, Samantha?
I'm doing great, Mark. How are you?
Okay. Do you feel like you are a torchbearer?
Oh, God, no. Not at all. You know, I don't think of myself in those terms at all. Just, you know, I play guitar, and I play what I feel. I play what I like. You know, and I don't know. I'm just having fun and enjoying myself. And
yeah. Well, we need someone to carry on, though.
Well, you know, I'm doing the best I can. We go out show by show and, you know, spread music to our fans and to new people all the time.
Yeah, you are a road dog.
Oh, man, we tour a lot, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, have you gotten to a place now where you feel like you're in a groove with it?
You know, I do. It's gotten comfortable, you know. I mean, it took a long time to kind of get used to not being home anymore. You know, you grow up, you live your whole life there, and then now we spend most of our nights in hotels and everything. So you do get used to it, living out of, like, a suitcase and, you know, spending a lot of time in a van. But, yeah, I mean, I think you can get used to anything.
Yeah. Sure. I did it for 8 years, and it was, okay, I can't wait till we can stop at the next place so we can do laundry.
I know. I try just bringing enough clothes for the entire trip so I don't have to do laundry, but it never works out that way.
No, it sure don't.
Yeah.
So you're originally from Kansas City, and... I know y'all in Kansas City think you got the best barbecue and all, but...
Oh, we do.
No, I don't know about that. Now, hang on.
I thought this was a guitar talk, man. What are we going to get into a barbecue debate?
Like I said, we're going to talk about everything.
Okay, well, listen, I know Texas. You're in Texas, right?
That's right.
You guys got your brisket, and that's all right.
That's right.
And it's a specific taste, man. I mean, some people really like brisket. You know me, I'm a ribs girl. And that's what Kansas City is famous for. I mean, but it's so different. How can you compare apples and oranges?
That's true. All right. Hey, you know, I had Tommy Shannon on here, and me and him were arguing about breakfast tacos, so.
Oh, my gosh.
So you started out as a drummer?
Yeah, I did. I started playing drums when I was 13.
And you picked up the guitar at 15?
Yeah, I picked up a guitar at 15, and I've been playing ever since. That's been about 12 years ago.
So when do you think, you know, because I started out as a drummer too, and I kind of tend to think that having that as a indoctrination in one way or another influenced my ability to be a good rhythm player. Do you think that's the case?
On the guitar? Absolutely, yeah, I think so.
It like kind of installed your clock.
You know, I was really thankful that I started on the drums because it gave me that foundation of, you know, rhythm and being able to count through music. And, yeah, just feeling it, having it, like, it, you know, having that clock always there.
Right. Right. You know, it's funny because, you know, you're one of those... For lack of a better term, you're sort of like a YouTube darling. You're one of those people that's out there on YouTube, and I mean... I don't think a day goes by, honestly, that I'm not going through my Facebook feed and somebody's posting a video of you.
It's crazy, right? And, you know, it's a double-edged sword because there's so much out there, you know, and everybody's got a camera now on them. So even the things that you're, you know, at times you're like, man, I wish that performance wasn't on the internet, but there it is forever out there on the internet. But it's been good to us in a lot of ways, and we've gotten, I mean, most of our fans, I think, have come to us through YouTube and social media. Like, I can't tell you how many people come up at the shows, but, you know, I typed in Cigar Box Guitar, and you were the third video down, and that's why my show.
Right.
You know, buying tickets and CDs and being a fan, you know, I think it's really cool, and it has helped us in a lot of ways, connected us with, you know, a world we might not be connected to.
Yeah, for sure. Are you consciously using social media to help get your word out?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we've got a lot of likes on our fan page now on Facebook. And, you know, that's come through just videos going a little viral, and, you know, that people come and traffic is directed to our Facebook page. And it's pretty cool. But yeah, we're on social media. I mean, I do my best to keep up with it. We got a person at my record label who helps run it as well.
I really dig your new record. It's called Wild Heart. I think it's probably your most fully formed record.
I agree.
It, tracks like Roadrunner, you know, which is a real barn burner. Were a lot of those tracks recorded live in the studio, or was it mostly step recording?
Oh, man, it was live.
Yeah.
I mean, I got in there with a trio. That particular record, the majority of it was recorded with Brady Blade on drums and then Luther Dickinson on the bass and the neon guitar. And then, you know, and singing live vocals and then coming back through and, you know, keep the scratch or re-sing it or add a guitar part here or there. But, you know, the trio, the bass of the songs, we just did it live.
What would you say, I mean, if you were to kind of think about, you know, you had your first record, Runaway, and then you had Black Wind Howlin', what would you say are there any stark differences for you in regards to those three records as you move through them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Runaway was my first album, and it was a scary experience because it was such a big deal, you know, to go and make your first record. My friend Mike Zito produced both Runaway and the Black with Howlin' album.
Right.
And he, you know, I grew up knowing Mike, like, musically, really. I met him when I was, like, 17 or 18. And, you know, I was really happy that I got to go and make those records with him. And, you know, but I think I grew up a little more by the time Wild Heart came out. I started working with songwriters, and my ideas were formed a little better. I think I had a little more ideas musically where I wanted to go, and I just wasn't as scared to put something out there that might not fit into the, you know, the genre that they put me into, or that I put myself into, really, you know, like, I wasn't really as concerned with that. So, you know, I think it was just more of a free, it was a freer performance, freer album, for sure.
Yeah. And is it, I mean, it's interesting because what's the differences between working with Mike and Luther?
Well, you know, they're both killer guitar players. You know, Mike is a great producer, and he's worked with a lot of different people. So, you know, he's taken that approach from a lot of different producers. You know, Luther, I really wanted to work with Luther because I heard his album, The World Book, he's coming with, you know, the Northwest of the All-Stars, and I just love the quality and, you know, kind of some of the ideas that they came to the table with. I mean, Luther is he's incredibly creative, and he's got a great ear for production and, like, you know, hearing these specific parts and putting them on the song and, you know, these nuanced parts that make it more dramatic. So, you know, I mean, they're both incredible producers, like, apples and oranges. It was totally different working with both of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's my experience hearing what Luther does is usually it seems to be a much more organic approach.
He's very, you know what, I remember we got in there, it was kind of, he was just like, hey, just play it how you would play it, sing it how you would sing it, and it kind of took me a second to go, like, oh, how do I do that? You know, but he just really wanted me to play it and sing it like I would live, because he felt like that, you know, that's what people really are hearing is my live show,
right?
More than the albums, but that's what needs to be captured and that's what needs to be put out there. But yeah, I mean, he's very, very much like a, you know, he's not heavy handed. He's like, just perform it how you perform it, and they get the best take they can.
Yeah, and you seem to be one of those guitar players. I mean, when I watch you play, you seem to be one of those guitar players that sometimes you kind of get lost in it, which is great. You know, I mean, I've seen you play sometimes, and you go for it, and your eyes are rolling back in your head, and that to me tells me, okay, she's not even, the audience is inconsequential at this point. It's her, the guitar, and the sound that's coming out. It's like you can't tell where one begins and the other ends.
Yeah, I mean, you really really got to dive in with that kind of stuff. When you're playing shows like that, and that's the music. I mean, it's not a lot of choreography that goes into it. You just got to kind of let it go. And sometimes it's gonna, you know, from day to day, it might be different.
Mm-hmm.
I notice when I play, like, if I've got a solo, I've got concepts. You know, like I've got bullet points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like little things, like part of, you know, dynamic things that I know I'm gonna aim for, mm-hmm. but it's like, how do we get to that point? It might be different from show to show.
Right. Yeah, well, yeah, for sure. Because depending on what you feel that day, how you're feeling, what kind of sleep you got, how much rest you got, how the crowd is feeding you, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, shit, it could be what you had for breakfast.
Exactly.
You know. So, you know, it's funny because there's this really cool live version of Bitch on the Run that actually speaks to that whole idea of the dynamics, because you're doing all this riffing in the very beginning, and you're kind of building up, and then the song comes in and the nice kick in the teeth. And is that still in the set?
Yeah, man. I mean, it is different every night, and that's one of the frustrating parts of the show, because it took me a long time to, you know, like I said, figure out what I wanted to do with it.
Yeah.
Without you know, not wanting to just get up there and noodle around, you know, I want to say something with it, because, I mean, you can tell by how the crowd reacts to, you know, certain things, like what's going to work, what doesn't really work, what hits them in a good place. So, you know, just trying to find that,
mm-hmm.
you know, take them on that cool journey so that we can set the song up, because it really is just, you know, that's the part of the show where you set the song up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. It's funny, there's this video, and I don't know if you're going to want to talk about this, but there's a video of you doing War Pigs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's so wild. When I was watching it, I'm like, holy shit, this is fantastic. And
yeah, thank you.
The cool thing was, I don't know how you did it, but you and the band turned it into this funky thing. It no longer became, and it was no longer Sabbath, and it turned into this funky thing. And I was really liking it like what Hendrix did to All Along the Watchtower. Because if you hear All Along the Watchtower, the Dylan version, it's completely different.
Exactly, yeah.
And, yeah. You know, you guys just went for it, and it was killer. Just so great.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, do you still do that?
You know, we did it for so long.
Yeah.
I think we did it for about 3 years, and it got, you know, it kind of turned into a monster in a way, you know, because now we've got so many albums out. I'm like, all right, I want to start playing my stuff with
the
show.
Sure, sure.
You know, but and that's the thing, we did it for so long, and there's so many videos out there of us doing it. I mean, we might pull it out on special occasion.
Right.
Like, when we literally have nothing left to throw at the audience, but they still want one more, we might throw it out. But, you know, we kind of retired it last year, but I don't think people are happy about it, I'll be honest.
That's,
we still hear it.
It's
really kind of like a running bet in the band. We're like, how long into the show before somebody screams War Pigs? Usually about four songs in, and someone's going, War Pigs!
That's great. Well, at least they're not screaming Freebird.
But hey, and you know what? I can't play that song four songs into the show, and the show would be over. What are you going to do after that? You have to just pack it up and go home. It's a pretty epic song, and you know, it is fun to play. It gets a rise out of people. I think we started doing it just to, like, get a rise out of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're doing this crazy song at these blues festivals. I mean, I don't know. I think I just started doing it because I thought it'd be fun, and it was kind of funny.
Well, yeah, it's a complete left turn, and that's what's good. I mean, because that'll catch somebody's ears. Like, really?
Yeah,
seriously?
It was a blues band. You know,
yeah.
They wanted to be a blues band.
Absolutely.
And so I felt like it fit. I felt like it fit because I grew up listening to that stuff. And, I mean, and you really can't. I mean, we tossed around ideas of doing Primus for a while, and it's like, it's still going to sound like us, no matter what we do.
Right.
I'm still playing it on that Delaney guitar,
right.
And it's still going to sound like me. I can't really get too far away from that, so, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Well, yeah, I love it. I think it's great.
Thanks.
So when you're up and, you know, when you're out doing shows and stuff like that, and you jam with somebody, you know, somebody else comes up on the stage and you jam, like a Paul Nelson, who's been on the show a bunch of times. What's your approach when you're
having an exchange like that? Do you have to adapt to that individual, expect them to adapt to you? What do you do?
Yeah, you know, and for a long time, I think I was a little more rigid when it came to that. It was like, I just wanted the song to sound how I wanted it to sound. But, you know, when you throw somebody else up there, it doesn't matter who it is. Like, if the song's going to change and their personality is going to be, you know, now it's a part of the song. So I feel like it's my job at that point, like when you have a guest, to kind of to adapt to them. Mm-hmm. And like, all right, I lay down the foundation of this part. This is kind of what it sounds like, you know, but now I listen to what they're playing and then I work around that, because you definitely don't, I'm not going to, like, you know, force a square peg into a round hole, or, yeah. If it's not working with my idea, then I kind of loosen up and just sort of approach it from, you know, like a listening standpoint.
Try to
make it happen that way.
Right. So you try. Yeah. First, you try to like lead it, and then see where it goes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I read your bio, and your bio says that, you know, your influences early on were Sheryl Crow and the Stones and Tom Petty, where I don't really hear that stuff in your music.
Well, I do. You know, I do. I definitely do. Especially some of the newer stuff. You know, we've worked on writing. I just did an acoustic album. And so I think you can kind of hear some of my earlier influences in that. But, you know, it's all part of the songwriting. I think it's the songwriting process. You know, the guitar part, you know, you probably hear, like, all the shredders, like Angus Young, Keith Richards, and then, you know, my favorite guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think definitely those guys inspire me more on a songwriter approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's, yeah, okay, I get it. So from the songwriting standpoint, but from a guitar standpoint, it's probably a whole mess of other people, right?
Yeah, but, you know, I love Mike Campbell, too. You know, we talk about the Heartbreakers. He's one of my favorite guitar players. And he, you know, I think I got away from that kind of playing for a while, because you get into this, you know, it's like a jam thing. You know, I go to these blues jams, and it's like now we're cutting heads and shredding back and forth. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that was one thing I found when I was working with Luther was, you know, he's like, just play it melodically. You know, these simple lines that people can sing along to are so much more important than you know, how many notes you can fit in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always just get really turned off when guitar becomes a competition sport.
You know, I don't like it either. I kind of, I'll be honest, like, I almost hate guitar players sometimes. Like, damn it, I don't, we're like the most, we have so much to say, and we say it so loud. We're the worst.
Yeah, the only one's worse is the drummer.
No, they're good. They're holding down the groove. Okay.
Let's hope they're holding it down.
They are. They should be.
as long as they're not a hot dog.
Exactly.
So, you know, as you get older, not that you're old, but as you're maturing,
damn.
as you're you're a youngin. As you mature in this business, let's put it that way. As you're maturing in the business, and you're maturing in understanding your art form, do you find yourself going back and digging back in the past for stuff?
Of course, yeah. You know, and going back to things, like, are you talking about...
musically.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of where I started, though, you know? When I got into blues music, I mean, I grew up in Kansas City, so there's a lot of bands out of there that were touring, you know, nationally and internationally, and, you know, it's a music town.
Yeah.
And so I kind of got this education and blues and jazz through Kansas City, but I don't think I really fell in love with it until I found North Mississippi music, which I think is what really drew me to Luther,
mm-hmm.
because there are these young guys doing that kind of music that I love.
Yeah.
You know, so I was really heavily inspired by, you know, Junior Kimbrough and Arlo Burnside.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I went back further from there and got into Delta Blues, and, I mean, like Charlie Patton, Skip James, like that's some of my favorite stuff of all time.
Right.
The Owl Blowback recordings, and, you know, I just kind of started really trying to digest as much of that as I could, because I really feel like that's the heart of it. That's the root. That's where it all comes from, and that's the most important thing.
Right.
Especially when you're playing a music that's so, you know, the emphasis is on tradition and passing it down. I mean, you really have to go back and do your homework, I think, with blues more than anything.
Well, yeah, I think it's probably one of the most visceral art forms there is.
Yeah, knowing where it comes from, you have to understand that.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the heart and soul of music, and that's where all of our modern music comes from.
Right.
Is those guys. So yeah, I mean, absolutely. I find myself going back all the time, buying old records, and you know, it's important.
Yeah, I found the same thing. I mean, it was when I found out that all of my Led Zeppelin records had really been influenced or downright stolen from somebody else. That's when I was like, okay, I've got to find out who these people are, and you know, so
yeah, exactly.
But so, what do you get from a Skip James or an R.L. Burnside or somebody like that that you don't get from a Stevie Ray Vaughan or vice versa?
You know, I think with Delft music and North Mississippi, it's about the groove. You know, I think that's maybe why I fell in love with it, because I'm a drummer at heart, and I grew up on rock and roll music, but to me, it kind of marries this, like, almost a punk attitude.
Uh-huh.
Of, you know, this rock attitude. Like, as far as, you know, R.L. Burnside goes, you know, it kind of marries these, like, this, like, harder edge to blues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about the groove, you know. It's not a standard form. It's not, you know, the 1-4-5, you know, shuffles that you hear it all the dance. Like, there's, like, a... It follows the vocals. And it follows the drums. And it's something really danceable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then to me, you know, just the guitar playing, like, you know, Skip James and Charlie Patton, all that kind of, you know, the crazy picking, like, that stuff I still try to figure out.
Well,
I do this kind of hybrid picking when I play, and Luther's really good at it, you know. It's like you play the bass, the bottom string, you know, you hold down a completely different groove with your thumb and you do the rest of your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, yeah, I kind of get that out of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's some nasty shredding right there. When you can do that, like, that's nastier than any, you know, metal shredding thing you can do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, like, when I listen to R.L. Burnside, I what I dig is how they hang on the one chord.
Yeah, of course.
And it's this drilling into your head of this one chord and what they're saying on top of it all, that you don't even know that there's not a change going, that you know, you don't even realize there's not a change going on.
Yeah, there doesn't need to be. It follows the dynamics of the drum.
Yeah.
The drums and the guitar, and it's about the storytelling. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to describe. It's like, it's just a really danceful music, and it's fun, and I think I just fell in love with it.
Yeah. Well, and once again, that's another interesting thing about this particular American art form is that, you know, in North Mississippi, it sounds like that. In Chicago, it sounds like that. And in New Orleans, it sounds like that. And in Texas, it sounds like that. You know, it's completely different.
How broken up blues is by region. And, you know, you tell somebody you're from Kansas City when I'm overseas, and it's like, it almost adds a little credibility to what you're doing because you're from one of those cities that, you know, the blues kind of came out of.
Yeah.
Kansas City is probably one of the lesser known towns, but, you know, it's really like jump blues is a huge thing there. The jam started in Kansas City, but we got a huge tradition. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's crazy. I mean, Kansas City has its own style of blues.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know? And I can't tell you honestly how much of that I picked up, but, you know, I live there, and I'm surrounded by it, so
something's
got to be in there.
Oh, it's osmosis. It's, you know, hell, it's in the barbecue, too.
It is. Oh, we're going to talk about the barbecue.
Rule one is there are no rules. That's how I feel about it.
Arthur Bryant, that's the way. That's the one. That's my favorite spot.
So, do you have a favorite track from the new record that you're playing live right now?
Oh, it goes back and forth. I really am not sick of any of them. That's kind of the key, I think, because on all my other albums, I kind of, you know, you kind of start getting sick of certain songs. Like, oh, I gotta play this. think you just get used to it. But I mean, really, honestly, that's more of a feat than having a favorite song. I'm not sick of any of them.
That's good.
Yeah, but I mean, I really enjoy. I've got my friend out on the road with me right now. Now her name's Sarah Morgan. She's from Kansas City, and she's a country singer, guitarist, and she's been joining us on a few shows. But she does great backup vocals. So like we've been doing Go Home. And that's one of my favorite songs to play. And, you know, but when you got the full section with my bass player for singing together, it's really beautiful. I'm a harmony person. I love harmonies. So even, you know, anything I can throw harmonies on, like it makes it that much more fun and interesting for me to play.
Right.
Yeah.
That's cool. And what's the set running like now? How long is the set?
I'm 90 minutes booked on for.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's good. That's you're getting your money's worth there.
Yeah. I hope so.
So let's talk about gear.
Yeah, that's good.
I know you're big into tellies, and you play the Delaney.
Yeah.
And you've had that how long now?
I don't even know. I feel bad because I really don't even remember. The last few years have just sort of like melted together.
Uh-huh.
Because we've been out so much. I mean, I'd say probably three years, maybe?
Yeah, it's starting to get nice and beat up. It's got a nice patina on it.
Oh, it looks great. I mean, the lady was mad at me because when we first made it, that front piece is like, it's an F-hole, that fish.
Right.
You know, but he makes them thicker now because it's a signature model. He has to make them twice as thick because I was like punching the bones out of the fish. Like, I was punching the stripes out. And yeah, and losing them every night. And so I had this broken guitar for a long time. And he was like, yeah, it was terrible. Like, what are you doing to this guitar? And I guess I'm just getting it.
Well, he should know better. He shouldn't be making no dainty guitars.
Well, he's not anymore. They've been road tested, you know.
Exactly.
The test model's been punched by me several times. So, you know, if he gets through me, he gets through anybody.
And you do, you also do some stuff with Fender, right?
You know, not really much anymore.
Uh-huh.
I've gotten into my custom builds a lot. Right now he's making me kind of a 339 style guitar of Delaney.
Ooh.
But you know, I love Fender. Fender's a nice classic Fender. I mean, that's where I started with the Telecasters. I actually started going to Les Paul.
Really?
Les Paul Studio. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, you tend. I notice that you like a fat sound. You don't. You're not into that thin thing.
No, and you know that's why. I think because I was playing Tele for a long time, and then I saw Tappan Wong, the contemporary blues guy. He was awesome.
Amazing guitar player.
He's a mega guitar player. He doesn't play with any effects. He's one of my favorite guitar players. But he's a thin line Telecaster. They got humbuckers and. You know, semi-hollows, that kind of darkens it up. I mean, really, I think the thin line is the most versatile Telecaster, because you can make it sound like, you know, like a thin Tele, or you can make it sound really fat. It's pretty great.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing I've always loved about the Telecaster anyway, because it was that nice hybrid between a Strat and a Les Paul.
Yeah.
You know. Delaney's making you a 335 style?
Kind of like a 339, just something.
Oh, okay.
Luther got me onto those, in the studio on this last album, I played his 339.
Yeah.
Kind of close to it. And yeah, the hollow body's
like
taking off. I've been having more fun with feedback, and I really want something a little thicker than a Tele. So.
Those are great because they're compact. You can really get on them.
Oh, man. I'm looking forward to it. Like, I'm getting into the phase of my guitar playing now where it's like, I might mess with, like, I got a couple things on pedals, and I'm messing with some feedback, so.
Uh-huh.
You see what else you can create with the amp. It's kind of fun to experiment.
So what do you got on the floor?
Oh, well, I got a guitar tech, and I didn't used to play with pedals, but then he started making me, so he got excited about it, and he made me a board, which, it's funny, they all have a purpose. Like, I used to just play straight into my Cat 5. It sounds great. That guitar into the Cat 5 sounds perfect. But, you know, I've got a little tremolo. I've got a pod for an octave, you know, because we do that on some songs, really fatten it up. I got a fuzz. and I've got a delay, an MXR delay, and then I've got an analog man, an old school analog man. And that's it, and a tuner.
That's cool. It's good keeping it simple. That's really good. And then you're going right into the Cat 5.
Yeah, right. Like, you can't really beat the Cat 5.
Those amps are monstrous.
Yeah, and I'm really, you know, the guy who makes them is named Don Ritter. He's got a second. Great guy. I mean, he makes, he can, but he's really getting out there. Gets the big boys to play, and, you know, I'm happy for him. I'm glad.
Yeah. They sponsor the back line for the Dallas Guitar Show every year.
And I was just there. I came down and I played at it.
Yeah, that was I saw you.
You did? Oh, okay.
And well, that's what necessitated me to say, okay, I got to get this person on the show. We got to talk.
That's awesome.
It was a fun weekend, right?
It was fun. I mean, I was just in and out. We had to play Fort Worth that night.
Oh, did you get to walk the floor at all?
You know, I did, but it's such a dangerous place for me. I walked in. I mean, they got, like, you know, 5,000 guitars in there. And of course, you know, I'm always looking for an old acoustic. I'd love to get a 40s Mark, and that's the worst place to walk in with your checkbook.
Or the best place.
Luckily, I didn't find it. Because I know once I do, I'm just going to throw down.
Yeah, it's my favorite show of the year. I mean, I do all the shows, and it's definitely my favorite show.
It's awesome. And it's huge. And honestly, I walked in. I couldn't really believe, like, how many people come out.
Right.
And it was just sort of, you know, knocked me out, because I walked around all the booths, and I mean, I worked with a lot of people that are there that I've never met, you know, like some of the pedal people.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I went around and saw everybody and checked out all the other products.
So you were right at home as far as the back line was concerned.
Yeah, that's easy. I mean, Don just said, you know, don't bring me in, so just kind of plug in the mushroom. All right. You know,
speaking of pedals, have you ever tried the Nobles ODR? You should check it out. I'm always telling people about this pedal. It's really great. It's a natural overdrive, they call it. And it's one of those pedals that I got turned on to through Guthrie Trapp in Nashville.
Nobles ODR?
Nobles ODR. It's actually the ODR-1 is this fantastic, really throaty, I don't know. It takes a single coil Strat and makes it sound like there's a P90 happening. It's just,
wow. I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, it's it is killer, and it's $100.
Nice.
So
I'm having something to play with.
Yeah, it's always fun. New toys, yeah. New toys. So what's ahead for you?
Well,
I mean, just
we got a lot. Summer.
I'm talking career-wise. What do you want to do? What's your plan for world domination?
Oh, jeez, man. I mean, we're playing a lot. And, you know, we've had a great summer so far. Playing a lot of, like, these crossover festivals. We just played High Sierra, which is incredible. We're playing Telluride this year. We tour all the time. I'm going home after the show tonight.
Yeah.
For, like, 10 days. I'm only going to be there for 2 days. I'm going to New Orleans to do some songwriting and do some photos. I mean, we never stop working. So for me, it's just kind of chipping away at that big thing one day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I love songwriting. So, you know, I want to go to Nashville more and work with songwriters. I've shot my stuff around. And that's something I need to start working on more. But really, in the live show, as big as time as I can, I'll be adding more people to it soon. Just keep getting out there.
Yeah. You're definitely, I like your old school approach.
Well, there's really, you know, we've been doing it this way. And, you know, can't really change it up too much now. That's what people know. So we have to kind of keep some things the same. But, you know, we've been getting more and more recognition, and like right now it feels bigger than it ever has. And just to keep
growing it and watch it grow. I mean, I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of my band and my people and my team I work with. And I know it's just going to, you know, working like this, it'll just get bigger and better.
So, yeah. Well, I tell you, you know, I've been listening to you play since the first record, and the thing that I always I appreciated about you was your approach is honest. There's an honesty to your sound, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, that's what I'm trying to work on more is to connect more, like, worry less about what I'm supposed to sound like, what I think I'm supposed to sound like, and just write songs from my heart and perform it that way.
Right.
That's gonna be the best way I can do it. That's the most honest way, and I think people will be thinking.
Yeah, well, I think people like you and people like Marcus King, you know, I think y'all are the future for this genre, and you know, for someone who is as old as I am now, I'm getting up there. I'm always wanting to see somebody, you know, like I said before, take the torch and run with it. So take it, be kind to it, and do what you got to do.
Hey man, thanks a lot. I will.
All right, thanks so much, and have a great show today.
Okay, thank you.
We'll see you. Peace.
Well, there you have it, folks. There's my interview with Samantha Fish. Folks, go to SamanthaFish.com. She's got a lot going on over there, and you can check out the website. Without any hesitation, let's get into it. Let's get into our conversation with Miss Diana Rain, great guitar player out of California. Guitar Radio Show, guitarradioshow.com.
All right, ladies and gents, we got with us somebody I think is ready to break. Somebody who's ready to take on the world. They call her the six-string siren. We have Diana Rain. How are you, Diana? How's it going?
It's going really awesome. Thank you.
Cool. Welcome.
I'm happy to be on your show.
Well, welcome to Guitar Radio Show. So I have tons of questions. I want to talk about your new record. I want to talk about what you've got going on with a band that you're getting ready to join in on. But mm-hmm. how does a young lady born in Romania, right?
Romania.
And yeah, how does someone born in Romania end up in Chicago? And I mean, was it Chicago that did it for you as far as the blues and stuff like that?
Well, that's definitely where I was introduced to the blues for sure. But music in general came before. Uh-huh. My parents tell me about the time when I was a baby and I was in my crib and I would like jump up and down asking for Bee Gees. Like, I wanted to hear the Bee Gees. And I guess they were my favorite. And my father was a professor of music in Romania. He played more horn, saxophone. He taught some basic piano. And then his sister, my aunt, was a famous singer in Romania.
Hmm.
So it was kind of on more my dad's side of the family that the music came from. And then my dad just really wanted a better life for us. It was me, my sister, and my mom, and my dad. And he fought pretty hard to get us out of the country and had the American dream. And when I was 3 years old, we were finally able to come to America, and we had a sponsor here in Chicago. I'm in California now for the last couple of years, but I lived in Chicago most of my life. And like a year or so later, we brought my grandparents over and my aunt and uncle. So yeah, we all came over to Chicago. And when I was 8 years old, I went to a gig at the Back Room in Chicago. It's a blues club on Rush Street. It's a blues jazz club on Rush Street. Mm-hmm. My uncle was playing drums. He was a drummer. He was playing drums for a woman named Cheryl, and Cheryl brought me up to sing, and she brought a man named Oliver, who was an older gentleman, and we all sat at the front of the stage, and they just said, okay, make up a song, and it was to the blues. So blues 1-4-5 progression, I still have a video. It's on my YouTube page of me singing the blues for the very first time and being introduced to the blues for the very first time. And needless to say, I was hooked.
Wow. And was it the guitar right off the bat for you, or just in general, just the sound?
At that moment, it was just the singing more at that moment. Guitar came like maybe a couple years later from a non-blues source. I was watching the Moscow Peace Festival, which had a bunch of hair bands on it on pay-per-view with my family. And Tom Kiefer of Cinderella started playing an intro to one of his songs, and that caught my ear, and I was like, I want to play the guitar. I was playing piano at the time, taking piano lessons, and my parents didn't quite catch on until a few years later that I really, really wanted to play the guitar. And I got my first guitar. They got me my first Fender acoustic, but it was so big. It was just so big. My hands were super small, and I learned a few things and was like, I think I learned Candlebox, that Maybe song. That was one of my favorite songs on the radio at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned that by ear. And I learned the Pearl Jam song by ear, and I can't remember which one. And then I learned some chords from a book, but it became too difficult for me to play that guitar, so I just kind of let it go, and then was like off to college. So, you know, timing is crazy in hindsight how everything happened and where I'm at now. It's just, I'm finally where I want it to be, but it took a while.
Yeah. And so first electric guitar, what was that?
The first electric guitar I remember in my life, I was pretty young, and we had a basement, and I don't know if Austin has basements. Do you have basements?
No, I'm originally from New York, but we had basements there.
Yeah, so we had a basement. We had a lot of stuff piled in there, and my grandfather would always grab stuff from around the neighborhood that people were throwing out, and I remember finding it was like a cream color guitar with two strings on it, like a red shell pickguard, and I would just go in the basement and kind of pluck at it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my first memory of having a guitar, and then the electric guitar came into my life when I was introduced to Stevie Ray Vaughan for the first time, and that was in 2005. I can't believe I didn't know about him before then.
Mm-hmm.
But he passed in 1990, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it had been like 15 years since he passed, and I got a DVD of his from Target, and I just saw the cover, and I grabbed it because I was intrigued, and it was Austin City Limits DVD, and I put it in there, and Pride and Joy was the first song, and my jaw dropped.
Uh-huh.
He's insane, he's amazing.
Yeah.
And I've been obsessed with him since. Tried to play then too, and I took some lessons, but still, like, it just wasn't meant to be at that time. I was acting also. I was playing rhythm guitar a lot more, and composing and learning how to record on my little first Apple computer laptop and an Inbox. This was like, 2005, 2006. So I just started writing a bunch of songs, and then I started playing live and singing backup for a band and immersing myself in the Chicago music scene. So that took up so much time. And I was lazy. I'm gonna be upfront with you. I was lazy. I was like 20-something lazy, not knowing that time is so precious. And ever since I had my son 4 years ago, it was like a big whack in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to make something of yourself, you better put in the time. So having him take so much time and effort and just work. But when I get my opportunities, I, like, run to my guitar. So it just makes you appreciate time so much more.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, being a father of two, I understand that entirely.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Oh, yeah. So you've got a record out now. It's called Long Road. And I've listened to it, I don't know, I guess about a half a dozen times now. And it's, to me, you kind of really kind of splayed yourself open on this. It seems like a very personal record.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Definitely much more so than the first record I put out.
Yeah. When
I think part of it is maturity.
Yeah. When you do a record like that, when you sit down to write, is it just a flow, was it a conscious choice to make it as personal as it ended up being?
It wasn't a conscious choice. It was pretty much all that I knew. Having my son, I was confined to my house a lot. And so it's just that relationship with me that was able to grow more during that time. And I gave birth to him at home. So after 16 or 17 hours of that, it's like I crossed this threshold from girl to woman, and from like meek little girl to no girl, you're strong. Like you better believe you're strong now after what you just did. So that really upped my confidence and gave me more of a license to be truthful with how I felt with myself and with others. Before I used to just be more of a people pleaser before, and just kind of avoid confrontation, keep quiet. And since having him, I'm more like, if something doesn't sit well with me, I'm more apt to just say it, because I don't want to let it sit and fester.
Mm-hmm.
So that played a huge role in all these songs, and they didn't come out. They did come out in the flow. 11 of them did. The first song that I wrote like a year before I started writing all the rest, and that was Long Road.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I made the decision when my son was a year old that I wanted to do music for the rest of my life, because previously I was so balancing acting or music or like, which should I do? I don't know. You know, I want to do one, but I can't like devote all my time to both, because then I'm half-assing it kind of. So I didn't want to do that. I wanted to throw myself into one thing. And I actually read a book called The One Thing, and that helped me make the decision. So I knew from the beginning of the time that I was born, music was a major, much more important role for me than acting.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote Long Road first, and then January 1st of 2015. To January 11th, that's like 11 days, I wrote the rest of the song. They just came out. They just came pouring out. I started with my guitar. I would find some cool riffs that I liked, and then build on those and create the format of the song, the foundation, and then I wrote lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when I write a song, and since the foundation is laid out with the guitar, I just start singing along, and whatever words come out from my subconscious, I generally tend to keep, and then I start building around those.
So when the songs are, I mean, where do the solos come in? And I'll get to why I'm saying that, why I'm asking that in a minute.
Yeah.
But is it the song is written, the lyrics are done, the basics are cut, and then the solos go on, or is there a solo in mind early on?
No, when I started January 2015, I recorded everything else except for the guitar leads. Partly because I was afraid. I was like, oh my God, it's going on here. Like, this is it. and partly because I was waiting for an amp to be built. And then partly, the third part is because I just wanted to keep learning as much as I could before it was time.
Okay.
So it took quite some time for that, like maybe 6 months for me from when I finished everything else to finish the weeds. But I feel like it was like perfect timing. And then when I went to go and do the solos, I play the song and I just start playing until I hear a melody, until I hear something that moves me, until I feel like it has some sort of like a beginning, middle, and end.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then I'll go ahead and lay that down.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I noticed about the solos, and this is something I look for when I listen to guitar players, is the solo, you know, and I've talked to Chris Duarte about this a bunch of times, and Stoney Curtis, too. We were talking about how the solo should be the song within the song, you know? And that's one thing I have to say, like, when your guitar solos are very tasty. And they're very melodic, and they are songs within the songs, and that's to me, that's the ultimate compliment to the song, and only enhances it too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, thank you so much. That's an awesome compliment, and I appreciate it. I think that I have somewhat of an advantage being a singer too, because.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I look for when I'm creating my melodies.
Yeah.
So I think since that lives inside my brain to begin with, it just can't help but come out
right for
the solo. Like, I remember, I don't know if this is totally related, but I remember watching Stevie Ray Vaughan one time on a video and just being kind of gobsmacked at that moment. Like, this is what he was actually hearing inside of him at that moment. Like, how amazing is it to be able to play an instrument where people can pretty much read your mind, because that's how it's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just split seconds apart from when you're thinking it in your brain to when it's coming out of your fingers on the guitar. If people get to hear what's in your, I mean, it was a cool moment where I was like, it's such a simple thing that I'm talking about, but it was just like a worldly awareness of how awesome music is.
Yeah, and you know, and with him and players like him, not that there are that many players like him, his vast vocabulary. And that's really what it was. He when he played, he spoke, you know, and it's funny because he never thought he was a really good singer, and he was actually a really good singer too. But
yeah.
His vast vocabulary of expressing those notes over so many years, and immersing himself in so many different players. And I mean, you know, when you hear Stevie, I think predominantly I hear this cross between Albert King and Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
Some people, you know, every once in a while you hear a little Buddy Guy, you know, especially some of those hard, you know, staccato attacks, the way he would dig into a string, you know. But predominantly, I think, as far as voicing, I heard a lot of Hendrix and I heard a lot of Albert King in this wash, this combination. And but that was from a tonal standpoint. Whereas all this other vocabulary came in of Albert Collins and B.B. King and, you know, all the Kings, Freddie King and Earl King, and you know, and all those people and Buddy Guy. So yeah, I mean, I think as our vocabulary, as players, as our vocabulary builds, what ends up happening is what you were talking about, the idea of that split second thing of when it gets processed through the brain and into the fingers. I always say it's I always say it's heart, hands, wire, and wood. You know, that's kind of, and Billy Gibbons says it's meat on metal on wood. You know, you know, and I think after a while, I think when your vocabulary does become so advanced, and so like all of us, like me, I've noticed in the last just the last 5 years how my vocabulary has changed. That
so cool.
I don't think nearly as much as I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. That's what I love about the guitar. Like, you never stop learning. It never stops evolving.
No.
That's how it keeps us hooked.
Yeah, and keeps you young too. I mean, because I'm no whippersnapper at this point.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Yeah, hell yeah. So when this record came out, how long was it before you actually got to get out there and play some of these songs live?
Actually a couple days. I did an interview on a Laguna Beach radio show with the host Kenny Big Daddy Williams. I did a show like 3 days after the album release where I played two of my songs, but just solo for that. And so, yeah, a couple days, and then to play with other people, maybe a month or a little less than a month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe 3 weeks after.
And how?
I didn't have a band. I didn't have a band when I released my album, and I was really not sure what was going to happen with that.
Right. So did you go out just you doing it, or did you actually have a pickup band or something?
It was at an open jam with that Kenny Big Daddy Williams host out in Mission Viejo, California. So I went out there, and they had listened to my stuff. So we played a couple songs, played some covers. I go out there almost every week now, and we add to the roster for my songs. And they have a band called Paper Moon Gypsies that I'm actually joining. So it's like a mix of my songs and their songs and cover songs. And I mean, it's just awesome. It's just music. It's exactly what I needed to get out there and have fun.
Yeah, and the more you do it, you feel like you're getting your. It's like muscle. You're building muscle.
You're building muscle, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely feel that way.
Yeah. I hear you for sure. So what's now you're going to be melding your stuff with the Paper Moon Gypsies. What do you envision there? Is that obviously you guys are going to end up doing a record together?
Yeah, I think so. We're talking about it. It's so, it's such new beginnings. but it's exciting times. It just feels like it organically came together where I was looking for a band, and I expressed that to Kenny when I did the radio show in May. And he had a couple bands going, but he had one band that was not doing anything at the moment, and they're called Paper Moon Gypsies, and they were looking for a singer, and it just so happens that this singer also plays guitar, so we got me on guitar vocals and Kenny on, he sings too and plays guitar, and Joe Dolce on bass and vocals, and Rich Smith on drums and vocals. Like, we all sing, so it's great. Like, we can all take some turns and give the audience something new and different, and just kind of have a fun show. And so, yeah, it's a really great collaboration. I'm very excited. They're awesome people. It's all about the music. Just good people. Like, that's what I'm happy about the most.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool.
Just to feel supported. Like, they don't, it's not a judgmental group. And you need that great support system to enable growth. Mm-hmm. And so it's exactly the right opportunity for me right now, and hopefully for all of us.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I love that idea. And it's going to be interesting to hear these tunes off of Long Road, to hear those tunes live with that band.
I know.
It should be interesting.
I know. It's exciting.
Yeah. I have an idea of what I think it might sound like. It might sound a little heavier.
Yeah, like with Kenny on guitar too, it definitely sounds heavier. We tend to, at the open jams, like we switch back and forth with the guitar parts. And you know, on my album, I programmed all the drums. I didn't have a real drummer. I played all the instruments
mm-hmm.
and recorded on my own. So to be able to, I remember my first open jam and I was playing a solo and it was kind of soft at first and I kind of dug in a little bit more and the drums followed me and that was like news to me. Like, oh my God, that's so cool. That's so cool to have this living, breathing entity now. So I'm pretty much like, I'm hooked on that. I'm hooked on going to the open jams in that supportive environment
mm-hmm.
to just explore and have like, just make music and not second guess yourself and, mm-hmm. and not feel doubtful. Just go for it.
Well, yeah, and to have that organic occurrence happening too. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, I could listen to a bass player and a drummer all day long and not play a single
yeah.
note. I just listen to them do their thing. I mean, when you've got a great bass player and a drummer and they're in the pocket, there's nothing quite mm-hmm. like that. There's nothing like that.
Yeah. I agree. And I can't remember what book it was. Oh, I wish I could remember the name, but it was kind of a spiritual book about guitar playing and, oh God, I think it was written by a Wooten brother.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. And it was like a spiritual book about playing music with other people and how listening is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. It's not about what you're playing. It's about what everybody else is
oh,
playing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about air. It's about letting mm-hmm. letting there be air in between, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the beauty of it. What Tom Waits actually calls, he says, music is something interesting to do with the air.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So
I like that.
Yeah, me too. So what can you give us a kind of look into what's ahead? Or do you even know?
So
or?
Me and, yeah, the Paper Moon Gypsies and I, it's called Diana Rain and Paper Moon Gypsies.
Okay.
And we are doing, Kenny and I are doing a duo gig out in Dana Point next Saturday at a wine festival. And we're booking shows, a band show, our first band show is July 7th. In Newport Beach
mm-hmm.
At the Blue Beat
mm-hmm.
and I think we have a show lined up for July 22nd. I'm not sure where though yet, so we're just booking shows and getting out there. We're doing our open jams every Wednesday where we're the house band
mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just playing a lot. That's and now that I'm not writing, well, I can't say I'm not writing because I just wrote a song last night for what happened in Florida last weekend.
Oh, wow.
And so we're trying to find a way to maybe incorporate that into a show or record that somehow and put it on YouTube. But my point is, like, I finished recording, which was a whole task because I was doing it myself, and now I feel like I can breathe, especially feeling comforted that I found a home band to be with. So my creativity now, like the lid just came off of my creativity where I can write again. I can practice a lot more and just play live a lot.
Cool.
So that's in the cards for me. Yeah.
That's cool. So tell me about your gear. Start with your guitar. What do you got going on there?
So I have two guitars. I'm not a like tons of guitars kind of person. I do have one guitar that I feel really bad about because it's just sitting in my cave, in a cave. It's a Les Paul Epiphone.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad bought it for me, so I just cannot bring myself to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
I used it on one song for a YouTube video that I did, a blues cover of a song called Am I Wrong?
Mm-hmm.
It's a pop song, but I turned it into a blues song and a blues rock song. So I used it for that, but it's a bit heavy. So my preferred guitars, I have two Fenders. One is a red California series Strat that's almost 20 years old. As my dad bought it for me in, like, I think it was 2005. And as I understand it, California series guitars were only made in 97 and 98. So it's pretty close to 20 years old. So I use that one and I tune it flat. I have it set up for flat tuning. And then I have a Sunburst 62 Hot Rod vintage reissue. I like that one because it has a thick V-neck.
Hmm.
Like, even though I have really small hands, for whatever reason, like when I would practice on my other Fender, it has a relatively bigger neck, but it's not big enough.
Mm-hmm.
But when I would do my exercises, I would get cramps in my hand. When I play, if I play a song, I don't get cramps. But when I was doing my exercises and warm-ups, I would get a cramp. So I looked into the thicker neck, and the 62 Hot Rod was the one. And it's pretty awesome. I think it lends itself to the tone as well. The pickups in the Sunburst 62 reissue are not original. I bought it from somebody on eBay, and they switched out the pickups with Kenny Learned's. I don't know if you're familiar with that maker.
Mm-hmm.
Kerry Learned from, I think he's got stuff on eBay, but it's like custom 64 pickups. And then the pickups that were originally in the 62, I put in my red Cali Strat, which
mm-hmm.
I feel made a big difference. And I'm not totally sold on the Kenny Learned. I need to find a better set of
mm-hmm.
pickups. I just don't like the bridge tone. It's really, really too piercing.
Mm.
Just too quacky for me.
Well, that's the deal with the Strat. I mean, you know, I'll send you a couple of links of some stuff that I think you might like, but yeah, I mean, that's the one thing about the Strat is that bridge pickup can be really shrill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know if, I'm sure there's, I mean, it happened with the pickups that were in my 62 originally, where they really complimented my red Strat, my Cali Strat, where the tone on the bridge is just, I love it. So if I could make that happen with my 62, I don't want to switch it out again, but I'm sure I could find something. Maybe noiseless pickups. I don't know if there's... you just go through this money pit of spending money on pickups until you find something.
Yeah, you're always...
Yes, your acquisition, yes.
Well, that's just... I think that's kind of the... price of admission when you play guitar, you're always chasing tone. You know, you're always chasing tone. What about amplifiers?
So for my amps, my practice amp is the Yamaha THR-10C.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. I love the reverb on there. And then I have a 1976 Super Reverb that I bought from Reverb.com, and I have not played it out live yet. I have played it in the house pretty loud. But yeah, I have yet to play that out live, and I think the first time that I'll be able to do that is maybe a July 7th gig,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe an outside festival gig. So we'll see with that. And then I had a amp head built for me by Cheriatone. I think I'm saying that right. Cheriatone or Cheriatone. They're a company in Malaysia,
mm-hmm.
and they make replicas of amps. And The one I got was the JM50. It's a 50 water, and you can also, it has a switch on it so that it could be a 25 water.
Okay.
And it's like a mini SSS steel string Singer amp. So I have that, and then I made a cab for that, a red cabinet. and I think it's got a 65 speaker in there right now, and I can't remember the make of it. Warehouse? It's Warehouse. But I also have a 90 watt that I might switch it out with. So that's pretty much, it's pretty simple. As far as pedals, I keep that simple too. I've got a Tube Screamer, and I have a JJ Archer. It's a JJ Rocket.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, J Rocket.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like
J Rocket Archer. It's like a Klon clone.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that's cool.
And I have two pedals from, I got an Aux Fuzz 2 pedal and an Aux Vibe pedal. I don't use the Aux Vibe a ton. I think I use it for like two songs. And then I have a Wampler tape echo, faux tape echo delay. And that's it. That's it for now.
Well, that's pretty straight ahead. That's good.
Yeah. I don't like to complicate things. I know what I'm looking for, and it's pretty much mostly a little bit of a gain, and some fuzz sometimes when I really want to be a little bit more angry. And I love reverb. I love reverb. I have some people on Facebook are like, you know, you really need to use less. Like, you know, I love swimming in it, so that's my thing. I can't help.
Yeah, I'm a fan too.
I mean, my influences, you got Steve Ray Vaughan, and then you got Philip Sayce, and Philip Sayce is like king of reverb, swimming in reverb. So that's what my ear likes. Well, I can't help it.
Yeah, you got to go. Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's also going to inspire and take your, like we were talking about the vocabulary earlier, taking your vocabulary to another place too, is the sound that's coming out is going to influence how you feel and thereby influence how you play. It's just how it is.
Yeah, I tend to be on the melancholy side. So when I'm talking to you, like, I'm a generally happy, like, easygoing person, but when it comes to writing music, I tap into a more melancholy side, and the tones I choose tend to reflect that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'll tell you, I have a feeling that you're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Thanks. I'm working hard, that's for sure.
Yeah.
there's a lot of growth to be had, but it's fun, and I'm enjoying the process.
And that's the beautiful part right there, is about growth. And, you know, Albert King actually said, you know, he says, you know, if you learn a new lick every day, the day is a success.
I love that.
You know?
I agree. You know, I don't know if you have the experience where if you don't play for a while, you get crabby.
Oh, absolutely.
Does that happen to you?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's an extension of, I mean, as guitar players and bass players and any musician who really loves what they do, when you're away from it, for a period of time, like recently, I wasn't feeling very well. I was sick, and I just didn't play. And there was a yearning, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was like Katie Lang had a song called "Constant Craving."
Constant craving, yeah.
that's what it was like. I mean, I would have dreams. I'd be sleeping, and I'd have dreams of playing. You know,
wow.
I mean, my wife tells me now that she, like there are nights when I'm asleep before her. She'll look over and she'll see that I'm actually fingering notes on the fretboard in my sleep. So, yeah, it's,
I love it.
when it gets in there, it's in there for good. There's no change in that.
Well, I definitely am glad that it got in there at some point because it did it in my, you know, early 20s. So
right.
I'm glad it arrived.
Well,
Yeah, I wanted my whole life.
I think it's arrived for sure.
I'm grateful to be a part of the community. Let's just say that.
Yeah, well, keep doing what you're doing, Diana. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and talking with us today.
Thank you so much, Mark. It was awesome. Yeah. I appreciate it.
And I wish you continued success, and especially with the record Long Road. And folks can actually. They can reach out to you via a whole bunch of places. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram.
I think the easiest is probably DianaRain.com, because then they can – I think I've linked all the social media places
on my website. Yes, you do. Yeah, so go to DianaRain.com, and Rain is spelled R-E-I-N, folks. So it's DianaRain.com. And it's actually a pretty good website. There's a lot to do on there. There's a lot to check out. And I wish you nothing but success.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Hold on 1 second, but we're going to sign off right here.
Okay.
Well, there you have it. Two incredibly talented guitar players, and it was great to talk to them both. And, man, I'd love to see them jam. That would be cool. That would be cool. Yeah. Without a doubt, that would be great. All right, we got to get out of here. But in the meantime, we just remind you, guitarradioshow.com. Come on over, check it out. We've got chocolate. And, yeah, that's about it, man. We're going to get moving. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Keep on playing. And please buy it. Don't steal it. We'll see you on the next episode of Guitar Radio Show. Peace.
I like this crowd already.
GRS Productions.
New episodes of Guitar Radio Show air every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podbay, Player FM, Podomatic, and of course on GuitarRadioShow.com.